I'm now joined by Keith Valentine, who's the RNIB's Director of Development and a Spurs fan, and David Clark, the Director of Services for the RNIB, who is a Liverpool fan. Thank you very much for joining us today. The reason we're mentioning football teams is because we're talking about the consumption of football as a blind or visually impaired person or just within our community. So, David, I want to start with you, really. As you lost your sight through glaucoma as a child, your earliest memories are going to see football.
Well, I was born to two parents who were from Liverpool who were just absolutely passionate about football, so it always probably played a role in the house. But actually going to the ground, I remember my school taking me to watch Liverpool Ipswich at Anfield, and we had to stay over special because it was a Saturday game. And I remember my dad was on the cop that day. I just remember being struck by the size of the place, for starters, and the noise. And, you know, in those days, the cop probably had 29,000 people stood on it before the whole sort of safety measures came in there and everything. So just this complete wall of noise. And one of my funniest memories, forget the game, which, of course, Liverpool won 2-0, but two things stuck out. One was a really sort of abstract thing, is that all these blokes were shouting stuff from what seemed like miles away up in the sky, and I had sort of visions of people sort of leaning out of windows yelling stuff, but of course they were just on higher rows in the stands, yeah. So I didn't really have a picture of what that looked like. But that day I also met Bill Shankly after the game,
yeah.
And I still remember his voice, and I still remember him saying, "Right, son," you know. And I just looking back, I think I was eight, just an amazing feeling. But that first kind of the smell of football, you know, from the burgers to the golden goal to the all that noise and feeling of a game, that was my first experience of it, and I was hooked.
So Keith, somebody that's losing his sight through RP later on in your life, you've seen football from a completely sighted perspective, but how has that changed for you throughout your life?
Yeah, well, it's definitely changed and normalised, which I think is a common experience for people who've got kind of degenerative conditions. You kind of, you know, the process of change can be really difficult, but then you settle into your routine. So I think David and I were at the Community Shield on Sunday, where Liverpool lost to Man City, and it was really you know, you can argue about that. You know, it was really interesting. It's the first time I've been to a football game with someone, you know, such as David, who's completely blind. I still got a little bit of sight, not enough to see the game, but we've kind of, I feel we've reached a crossover point where Dave and I are both enjoying football in a very similar way.
Yeah.
I noticed that his spatial awareness, his sense of the game, probably because he's been watching it as a blind person from a very young age, is kind of different to mine. I it's funny enough, I've never told you this, my first ever football game that I went to on my own wasn't actually Tottenham Hotspur. It was Southend United versus Liverpool in the third round of the FA Cup 1979. It finished 1-1, and the highlight was that the pie stand was in the stand. The lads climbed up on top and fell through the roof of it. It was one of the most boring and tedious games of my life. I'd been, as a younger child, my granddad had sort of taken me down to White Hart Lane, so I'd been to games before, you know, as a child, but it's the first one I did, you know, as an 11-year-old. And so, you know, I mean, I was hooked, always been a Spurs fan, but I think uniquely, because I lived in the north of England for a long period of time and was a single parent,
yeah.
I wanted my two kids to kind of experience live football, and it just wasn't feasible financially for me to make that Tottenham.
Yeah.
So me and the two kids, who were both now also nailed on Spurs fans,
yeah.
used to go regularly to see Hull City. And one of the things that was interesting in that period of 3 years mirrored the period that my sight went. And in a way, it was strange because it's obviously, it's a team that I'm fond of, but it's not the team that's in your yeah. heart kind of thing. And, you know, all those memories I had of like the you know, our two goes at the FA Cup in 1982 against Queen's Park Rangers, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, Aussie idealism, Ricky Veer coming over, or, you know, all those, you know, the ups and the downs of being a Tottenham fan were done watching the game and being part of the crowd
yeah.
and that was going. And as I was there with my kids, inch by inch, I lost sight of the football and started to switch over to sound. And, you know, it's a funny thing because on the one hand, it's kind of heartbreaking, but you're still going. It still is your game. You still
yeah.
feel part of what's going on. I miss being able to watch it, but quite honestly, it was such a treat on Sunday to go with Dave. I'm a season ticket holder at Spurs. What happened at Hull that was funny was that one season I was buying three tickets,
yeah.
but then because my site went and I was registered, they then gave me another one free, so I only had to pay
two
tickets.
Yeah.
So I'm not pretending for a minute that site loss is a dividend,
yeah.
or you should use your white stick for upgrades and discounts. But, you know, it was, I felt that Hull City at that time, you know, they had it right. I feel, and now with Spurs and the new ground and, you know, our seats in the new ground and the way that that club has taken so much time to make sure that I can walk through that door like anyone else and be part of the crowd where I belong, you know, is amazing. But it's still true that people that I've known for years from football still kind of are a bit confused about why I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, there's what you mentioned there, the fact that Spurs have done so much, and I mean, a lot of football clubs across the country, you know, are now doing things to make it more inclusive. I mean, look at Rangers. They've just signed something with Orcam so that all the visually impaired fans are able to read the books and all that. And just to touch on that kind of the technology, if you, I'll throw it back to you, David. The way that it's changed since you started going to football as a kid to the way that you consume football now, how has that changed?
So I think there's a number of things here. I mean, one of the things I learned to do is to sort of hone skills of following the game based on what kind of game I'm following. So, you know, if it's a big game with a crowd where you might hear the occasional kick of the ball, but you don't really hear, or if you're watching it on television where the commentary is, you know, it's supplemental almost because it's not like a radio commentary. I've learned to decode crowd noise. So from a strong tackle to a suspicion of a foul to a handball to a man on to a throw-in to a corner to a goal kick to a misplaced pass, all those things are registered in my mind. And 9 out of 10 times, I'm absolutely bang on with that stuff. And that just comes from having this kind of, I suppose, inbuilt desire to understand the game, no matter what the circumstances. And then you throw in things like an audio description commentary. And I think it's really important to make the distinction between a commentary that's provided by a generic provider and someone like Alan March Sport, for example, who are absolutely fantastic at providing proper audio described commentary. So, you know, a great example is that when Alan March Sport were doing the Wembley commentaries, you know, they would give you your match orientation before the game started.
Yeah.
So you would know, you know, where the north, south, west, east was, who was kicking which way, where the dugouts were. They give you that addition and continue to do that throughout the game, which is different to a generic radio commentary. But then I watched two other teams, well, three other teams if you include the one I coach. So I coach an under-18s football team where there's, you know, group of parents and then maybe a dog. I then go and watch St Albans City where there's about 800 or 900 people, where again it's still possible to hear the game. Occasionally pop in at home and watch Wigan Athletic, which is a bit more kind of, you know, 14,000-15,000, which is getting more tricky, so you tend not to. So what you find is that if I'm coaching the game on my under 18 side or I'm going to watch St Albans City, I don't need that intervention because I've got the soundscape of what's happening on the pitch and the way the ball's kicked and the way it's closed down and the interaction of the players, all that kind of stuff. It's particularly great that you're behind the goal for a corner because you hear everything and you can even add your own two-penner from time to time as well, which is good fun. You know, shouting to the goalkeeper, left, right, forward, watch number four, that kind of stuff. It's all nonsense, but it just winds them up a bit. But then, as I say, that decoding mechanism that I've built up watching it with the big games means that it is possible to sit in a ground without the audio-described commentary and have an understanding of what's going on. But if you combine the audio description with the amount of statistics that are available now from a technological point of view, then you can look at a game, you know, and of course statistics only tell one story, but if you know that it's 48% possession, you know, you can follow it. And then the final thing, of course, is you can sit where you like in the ground. So in the old days of technology, it was that you had to sit in a special place with a special group of people and you were treated as special and different and that was all a bit weird. But now you can occupy your seat in a ground, and because it's beamed to you, then, you know, it's easy to be part of the crowd as you want to be.
Keith, you were nodding along there when you were talking about the audio description. How was that for you using it, the Community Shield? Was it? Did he say, sorry, it was the first time that you'd used it properly?
Well, no. So I've the commentary for it's the first time I've been kind of like with someone else that's blind.
Yeah.
And we've both been enjoying the game together because I generally go with my kids or friends. And the nature of the free seat is it's meant to be, like my season ticket, it's meant to be a carer
that
goes along with you, which does cause a few problems because loads of my friends who want to come to the football with me can't see. So you can't, you know, in a way, it'd be nice if we had I'm not arguing for a further three seat to get people in. But I mean, what the reason I was nodding there as well, and I find it, one of the great things about working with Dave over the last year has been, and many of the other colleagues that I'm working with, sighted and not, is just learning about how other people navigate, live their lives, or work alongside blind people. And I can remember, so the last Liverpool game at Tottenham in the last season at White Hart Lane. And I think Coutinho was in the, just bringing him up now because he's in the news today as a possible signing at Spurs. But he, you know.
He won't be by the time this goes out.
Can we bring forward the release date? Just give me my moment of glory.
Yeah, go on.
But I can't see the play, mm-hmm. and I've got audio commentary. And Coutinho was making this amazing, scary surging run from our point of view towards goal. And Danny Rose played really well that day. I could drift off into it. But it was the first moment where what Dave's describing felt like it was starting to become a little bit of a reality mm-hmm. to me. And I know that you know, people who've these skills that Dave's got, he's been developing and refining all his life. I guess for someone's sight, it's the same as picking up a pen or, you know, it's a normal thing.
And unintentionally as well. It's not something you thought about doing. It's just something that's happened. Yeah,
and that's what happened with that game for me, that something else happened between having the commentary and hearing the sound that I felt like I was starting to get a spatial awareness of what was going on in the game. And that has developed as we've moved forward. Interestingly, it changed when I went to Wembley when we had the year out and then back to Spurs. It's kind of getting used to the physical environment you're in to be able to read the sounds and what's going on.
But, do you also think that was because you were sat next to David, who you've said just does it so well? I imagine you missed stuff and he kind of nudged you and was telling you what was happening as well, because he is...
Well, I didn't shut up.
Well, I don't doubt that, David.
But to be fair, mate, you never shut up. So I was fully expecting that when we were walking down Wembley Way. But I mean, at one point, you were making commentary on the passing, and after he'd made the comment, it was coming through on the audio, similar things reflecting that. Now, unless he'd arranged to have like a couple of minutes in advance on his headset so he could give me the advice.
You sussed me out. I was 20 seconds ahead of you. I can't believe you sussed it out.
Well, I liked it because it was evidence you were telling the truth, mate. So it's always good to have it proven.
I think as well why I imagine, David, you're so good at this is because, you know, you played 17 years for the England and Great Britain blind football team and you were also captain. So you not only have spectated football from a VI point of view, you've literally played it. So has that impacted the way that you watch football?
It's definitely, I think, twofold. So when I played five-side football for the England and Great Britain blind football team, it was definitely players that came in with an understanding of the game definitely found it easier to integrate into that game and become good at that game than those who had never had an interest in football. And that's completely separate from any kind of mobility, spatial awareness, sporting capacity, athleticism, because that knowledge of the game definitely helps you. And for me, you know, I lived and breathed it for all my sort of early life with my family. And then, you know, I never had any, you know, when I was born, it wasn't possible to play for your local school or your local club, never mind for your country. So all the kind of tens of thousands of hours of practicing I did were, you know, I largely thought were ultimately to no end. But then, of course, as society changes and the opportunities arise, they arose for me and I was able to take advantage of it. And that then gives you a real appreciation of the game. It didn't stop me, of course, scoring a goal at the Paralympics and then running away and hugging the first person I came to who happened to be a referee, which was one of the times I made the front page of the Metro, which was quite hilarious. But on a serious note, you know, it does that is precision. Yeah, you know, it's not just shooting at the goal and hoping it goes in. These are high-quality goalkeepers with, you know, fully sighted goalkeepers, quite small goals in that five-a-side game. So it's about, you need to know every single blade of grass. But I think there's something really interesting I took from what Keith was saying, which is that a lot of commentary and a lot of what's spoken about the game and a lot of what you hear is on the ball.
Yeah.
So you hear someone kicking a ball, which is passing it to someone else, and so the commentary tends to talk about that. Whereas I guess if you're watching football, you've got this complete kind of pattern of movement.
Yeah.
That
you know somebody's coming up the left.
Yeah. Lane. So much of what is going on is not going on where the ball is. The goal is being created by where the ball isn't. And that's the bit that I can get when I'm coaching a football team or when there's no crowd. Because I can picture an incident from the game I watched last night, whereas I went to watch St Albans City play at Dartford, and there was one instance where the ball was being played down the right-hand side and it was being quite intricately fed into the box, but it was clear to me that unless someone was making a run towards the far post on the left-hand side or at least making themselves available at the edge of the box, there's no way that was going to end up in a goal because it all got too tight and it was easy to block off. Now, I could tell that stood behind the goal. Sadly, at that time, St Albans City couldn't work it out because there was no one on the edge of the box and there was no one going to the far post.
Maybe they need to sign you up, don't
they? Yeah.
Did you take your
boots? Audio coach, you can tell them. But do you know what I mean? I've been watching football for so long and interpreting it for so long, and yet it's conversations like this that make me think that actually a lot of that interpretation is about what's happening off the ball.
Yeah. No, I think you're completely right. And I think what I'd like to touch on with you both, Keith, throw to you, is just where do you think the future is going to be with, you know, football and watching it from a VI point of view? Can either of you think of where this might lead? We see charities like Remap, you know, they built a bit of kit for a Liverpool fan where it was essentially a bike helmet with a controller, and that meant that he could zoom in and follow the game. Where would you both like to see it going? I would imagine more inclusivity.
Well, always more inclusivity. I mean, I love the sport. And, you know, the accessibility I have at the new Spurs ground, I'm genuinely over the moon with. I mean, I'm not encouraging any club or Tottenham to become complacent, but, you know, I think the technology will become increasingly personalised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my hope is that, to take that point about, you know, being aware of what happens off the ball, I mean, one of the thrills of the modern game is, for me, is the press and the pace of the way that the game's being played at the moment. To fully appreciate that, you've got to have a sense of, as Dave's saying, what's going on. That's where it all happens off the ball. That's the dynamic of the new game. And so only listening to him talk about that, I wonder the extent that technology can start to generate information that people can digest from that.
Mm.
I don't know where those are the kind of questions that it's difficult to answer if you reach from the technology that we have now.
Yeah.
But if you think about the way the smart glasses technology is going and the ability of that to increasingly process and translate the visual world that's around us, you can imagine a scenario where that's going to enhance the ability to, you know, watch a game of football and do myriad other things.
Yeah.
I tend to think that these... You know, the technology is where you can't, like you say, I mean, it's great that they've done that for that guy. I think, did you say it was at Liverpool?
Yeah, in Liverpool, yeah.
Yeah, that they've done that. I mean, it's brilliant that those sorts of things happen.
But these are like one-offs.
Probably stages to other, you know, to other things. Mm-hmm. I mean, to take it out of football for a moment, if you think about the, you know, the brilliant thing that Apple did first, and increasingly it's happened with Android as well, those accessibility things in smart devices, you know, have been transformational for blind people. Well, been transformational for everyone, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, for blind, visually impaired people, it's opened up so much more possibility. Mm-hmm. So I think, for me, where the future is the advancement of mainstream technology so it can process information, and that'll have an application, you know, into football environment. What I do, so just, I mean, one of the things I think that relates to that technology is, as people, football fans, are going blind, or people that are growing up with sight loss that are, you know, getting into football, I think it's really important that the channels for football, rugby, or whatever sport it is that, I mean, Dave and I are watching all of those sports, so it's amazing we ever get home. But, you know, wherever your passion is and your interest, I think it's really, really important that blind, visually impaired people feel part of the sports community, parts of that sense of being part of a club, not just because it's an amazing thing, you know, exhilaration of supporting a sport, but for our own identity and confidence to be, you know, to fulfil and participate normally in society with everybody else is a massively important thing.
Yeah, so many charities like Blind Sport UK for people to go out and do stuff. And like you said, it's that inclusivity. And there's a charity I was talking to the other day called Daisy Inclusive UK, based in Liverpool, and they're doing reverse inclusion. So they're bringing sighted people in to join in the blind sports for that understanding, which I think is a really important thing to do, which I think, with what the RNIB are trying to do, it matches perfectly. It doesn't matter if it's sport or technology.
Mm.
All these things are the step in the right direction.
Well, I think there's huge potential for this. So it was brilliant to see when I went to CSUN conference in March that the likes of Sony and Microsoft were really getting to grips and really taking seriously the requirements of participating in gaming, for example, and how that influences, you know, kids growing up. And you know, it's interesting to me that you would never have predicted that the world of what you might call real sport and the world of fictional sport, or let's say football, and how FIFA soccer on the PlayStation or on the Xbox mirrors real life. I mean, down to all the precise stats, all of the prozone type stuff that the clubs get at the fingertips of kids all around the world. And we've gone some of the first steps and really important steps in making those platforms available to people with sight loss. And I'm sure we're not too far away from being able to actually actively participate in those games, whether that's through, you know, a full-sized braille display where the movement is mirrored on the on the display, or whether it's something through virtual reality or augmented reality that you can hear through a headset. Now, if you think of all those possibilities and how possible that is, and you think that every single second and movement in every single game in the Premier League is monitored and is documented and is available as data,
yeah,
then it isn't too great a step to take that Prozone data or other providers are available and build that into an audio and touch and, you know, whatever medium you choose, makeup of a game. Now, whether that's whether you can do that in a live way or whether you can do that, you know, after the fact, I think we're not very far away from technology being able to enable me, for example, to experience the game of a particular player. So, you know, one of the first things that Sky did when they set about, you know, kind of revamping Premier League football was they had player cam. There's no reason whatsoever why player cam can't be audio player cam.
Yeah.
Every single one of those footballers is playing with a device on them that's giving them their heart rate and all that kind of data. Well, it could easily have a microphone in it. It could easily... So if you can imagine all those different channels coming together, the data's there. What we've got to do, perhaps, is push a bit harder. And what we've also got to do is make sure that it doesn't impact on the overall experience of watching football. So, you know, if you can imagine when we first started to look at this stuff, you get offered commentary by the club, but then you had to put a big set of DJ earphones on, so yeah, the entire game was missing to you because you had these big clumping earphones on that cut everything out.
Yeah.
So what I'll often do is put one tiny earphone in my ear. All the stuff's going on around me, and I've got the sound.
Like
so,
they do the cricket, they have the one earbud.
Yeah. So you've just got to make sure that whatever we do doesn't take away from the experiential aspect of going to a game of football and being involved. But I'm absolutely certain that we're going to consume this in a very different way in the future, because, as I say, the data's there, the providers are there, and I think what we've got to do, and I was talking to one of my colleagues at RNIB, Sonali Rai, about this just the other day, is what we've got to do is look at saying, well, how can we harness that to actually bring something amazing to people with sight loss?
I think what's happening now, and Hugh Huddy from the RNIB, he does a lot with binaural microphones, so it's spatial sound and augmented sound, stuff like that. We're at the point where it's going to be the next massive thing. That in sports would be such a huge use to the visually impaired community.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that just listening to Dave run through it, then it's clearly going to be very exciting. The technology is advancing at a pace unprecedented.
Yeah.
But all of that given, having this commentary in your ear and the swell of the crowd at the game of a club that you love, particularly if they're on the way to winning something, is already remarkable and brilliant.
Yeah.
So for me, personally, to having made the transition from watching the game to what some people just say, oh, well, you only listen to it, you know.
Yeah.
It is missing the point completely.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not, there's something alchemical in it. It's not just the sound of the crowd. Yeah. It's not just the Dave was saying, the smell of the pitch and the
well, so it's the grass. It's stale booze. It's stale booze.
You know
what I'm talking about.
You're specifically talking about Liverpool.
You know exactly the smell I'm talking about. You know all that stuff. You know what I mean? It's the burger vans. It's all the horses. All the elements of a football day.
We've spoken a lot about being there, but what happens when you say you're watching it at home and you just sat in front of the TV is obviously audio description is often on a lot of things, but I, from my point of view, I don't know if it's there on a Premier League match on a...
Well, I've got to be careful here because Jeff Smeaves, Alan Smith and Martin Tyler are all friends of mine, so I can't be too critical. They do a great job. They really do. No, I'm
not going to help you out.
I think genuinely we have to recognise that TV commentary is for a very specific audience, and this is a personal view, is that I would like to see some kind of augmented audio description commentary over the top of that. Now, I know the challenges of live audio description, but maybe it can be done through a parallel channel. Maybe it can be directional, so that they're coming out of different parts of the soundscape, with, you know, the sound bars and. In my early days, they called it quadraphonic sound. Was it surround sound?
Surround sound.
You know, you could have the main commentary coming from in front of you with the kind of top-up audio description coming from behind you. I think there's all sorts of ways of solving this. But I think we do need to recognise that commentary for the TV is quite a different thing. And believe it or not, at 10 years old, I was interviewed at school by the legendary Janice Long about this very subject. because at the time, Brian Clough, if you remember, you're probably far too young, Basil, but Brian Clough was saying that they should just get rid of all the commentary on Match of the Day and just leave it blank and just have the crowd noise. And I remember a very fresh-faced Janice Long was asking us about what we thought about that and whether we'd be able to consume the game or we'd be able to enjoy it. And of course, we couldn't because, you know, you to a degree you could, but if you're looking at television highlights, that's different to actually being in a game and interpreting sound.
What's going on, yeah.
But I think there are a number of different ways in which that can be looked at. And you mentioned sport. I actually think that the sort of stuff Hugh's looking at and the sort of stuff Sonali's looking at through augmented reality and virtual reality and 360 sound can have all sorts of implications. Because one of the things that Keith and I have been speaking about lately is that, you know, everyone has their own personal journey when their sight starts to go. It can be very sudden. It can be over a prolonged period of time. And what we've already discussed today is that because my sight went very early, you know, there's been a lot of my spatial awareness skills and interpreting sound and interpreting space has come from basically learned behaviour and I seriously wonder what we can do with those very technically described microphones you spoke about, and 360 sound and VR and augmented reality, to almost provide a training programme for the brain to actually neurologically look at this stuff and actually try and help people interpret on the way and see whether you can accelerate that level of mobility and that level of experience. And if you think about the applications of that, sport's just one of them, but just generally mobility, getting around, independence, all those kind of things.
Everyday life.
I think it would be hugely helpful, but there's a long way to go because, of course, you know, the nature of those soundscapes has to be so accurate for it to be worth it.
Of course. Well, I think spoken of about the visually impaired football there. So just looking into the next season, we should probably have a quick natter about that.
Mm.
Hopefully Liverpool can beat City this time round.
I'm significantly outnumbered here, aren't I?
Well, yeah, unfortunately. I'll try and be the neutral here, but what do you both think is going to happen in the next season?
Well, you just reminded me by the fact there's two Liverpool fans here and one Spurs fan of actually one of the best jokes in football, which is the Everton shop, which is in the main shopping centre in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it's called Everton 2. And the reason why it's called Everton 2 is that the main shopping centre in Liverpool is called Liverpool 1. So the address is Everton 2, Liverpool 1, which is just genius. I think it's tremendously exciting. I was, as a Liverpool fan, I was very worried about our pre-season. Don't forget that, like Spurs, our season finished on the 1st of June. We then had players off on England duty till after the 8th, 9th of June. And then we had players off in the South America, Copa America, African Cup of Nations. So lots of them are only just coming back. So God knows how they're feeling because we're not alone in that. It's not, you know, not seeking to put up some excuses, but there are going to be some severely depleted teams at the start of the season with players who will not have been rested. And I have to say, in Spurs' defence, exactly the same issue last year with the World Cup. So, you know, for someone like Harry Kane, for example, 2 years of that, you know, how much can the body take? I don't know. So I'm hoping, for starters, we get a good quality competition, but I think a few teams are going to be depleted. I think there's probably still 6 or 7 teams that can be very, very competitive for top four. I was, say, very worried about Liverpool's pre-season. I was very worried in the first half of the Charity Shield. And then the second half, I thought we battered City, actually. And maybe they switched off, maybe they thought the game was won, but I just got a sense that we were back on it. And I think we've been given a very relatively decent... We got our customary early fixture against Arsenal, of course, which we always get given. But we've got, you know, you've got games there in the first 6 weeks which you'd hope to win. It's going to be tough, I think. But I think, you know, winning the Champions League is one thing, and it took me this long to mention it, Keith. but to be honest, Jürgen's got to win something this year.
Well, yeah.
It's got to. And we all know what we want it to be. But I think it's incredibly tough. I think City are an unbelievably strong team, unbelievably talented.
Well, I know. We knocked them out of the Champions League.
Yeah, that's right.
And will it be Spurs' first full season in the new stadium?
Yeah. We played, I think it was about 4 or 5 games at the back end of last season. I mean, it's interesting listening to Dave talk there. And we were talking a bit the other day when we were at the Community Shield. I actually, as someone that's been going to Spurs since I was a little boy, I have to say I think this has been the most glorious and exciting time. And I know you get different views from people because all fans want their teams to do, you know, the magical thing.
Well, you get that usual slur, don't you? Well, what have you won? Well, do you know what? I actually enjoy watching good football. And I'm not saying we don't want to win stuff. Of course we do. But you must have loved watching the kind of football Spurs have been playing.
Well, let me put it this way to you. I'm very happy with our pre-season and the way it went. I feel for Oliver Skip, who missed that penalty the other day against Inter Milan. He's a great prospect. We've got some great youngsters coming through. I think we've got one of the best training grounds in Europe. Certainly the stadium's right up there as well. And remember, you know, last season, finishing where we did in the league, we were in the final of the Champions League. And when we bought Ndombele, we haven't bought any players for 500 days.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what
we know
it is
how you
that,
feel now.
That, I don't know what it is that. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
We're going down the same route.
Yeah. I don't know what Pochettino puts in his tea, but you know, I think you know, looking over you know all of the years when we've done well and you know difficult times, that what I see now is something substantial building in the club, and I'm obviously very biased, but yeah. I look at the kind of purchases that we're talking about making now in terms of players. I look at a system that's bedded in, people sticking with us. I feel really optimistic, you know.
But you also know, right, we both, in our day jobs, find ourselves leading people. And, you know, it's everyone, if you don't buy someone or you don't bring any new blood in, they go, well, you know, you've automatically gone backwards. And I think Jurgen Klopp and Pochettino have both said something very, very similar. Pochettino last year and Klopp this year. And I think he's right from a team perspective.
Yeah.
That actually, if you are convinced that you've got the right blend, the right chemistry, the right capabilities, the right assets to get the job done, it's actually beneficial not to buy anybody because you don't. You're building a togetherness, and if you bring that one player in and the chemistry of doing that happens to go wrong, if you really, really need that capability, then there's a justification for doing it. But if you don't, why would you? So people are saying at Liverpool, you know, you should bring in another midfielder, you should bring in another striker. You know, the only one I can probably agree with is you need to bring in another left back because James Milner's only going to last for so long. But you know, when you've got, if you look at our midfield,
you're gonna have that
you look at all those players you got in the midfield. You know, Lallana, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Fabinho, Keita, Henderson. You know, plus a couple of kids who are fantastic as well. And you think, well, no, you don't need to bring anyone in. So I think we're in quite a similar position to what you were last round.
Well, and you know, you make a good point. What's exciting about Tottenham at the moment is the ethos, drive. You know, the ambition of the club as, you know, as a unit. So as they build that team, they're going to be building that to further that cause.
Yeah. Mm.
And they're keeping players.
Well, exactly.
That's the other
thing. People want to play for the shirt.
Yeah.
And that's the joy to see. I mean, it kind of breaks my heart a little bit seeing, you know, Newcastle get ready for their season. You know, that's a massive club with great pride, and you can see the fans kind of turning on it a bit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And we've all been there in, you know, the past at various times. And, you know, if somebody says to me now, you know, do you want to finish fourth and be in the Champions League final? I'd take that so long as we can win it that time.
Don't forget, though, that Guardiola says it's high risk to want to win the Champions League.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's for him.
I think we'll leave it there. And I should really just give a nod to the fact that David, when he was playing football, went over his 100 goals by scoring a hat-trick against Germany, which when I heard yesterday, I was very impressed.
That is right. And then I got substituted. But yeah, you know, 4-1 victory. It was always nice to beat the Germans, not because of anything between England and Germany, but because they are an incredibly competitive nation to play against. And when we beat them, it was always good fun.
You are still taking your boots to the games, aren't you?
We never know when the chance might arise. You never know.
Keith Valentine and David Clark, both from RNIB, thank you very much for joining us here at RNIB Connect Radio.
Come on, you Spurs.
Cheers.